Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. In today's episode, as we come to the end of 2021, we're taking a look back at the year that's been and also looking ahead to see what's in store for the next year. So joining us for this discussion today, as always, we have our very own Mary Cullen, Founder and Managing Director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary, how are you?
Good morning, all. I'm very well, thank you.
And also we have our very own Liam Barton, Senior HR Consultant here at Insight HR. How are you, Liam?
Very good, Owen, and you?
Brilliant, all good, all good. So before we get into it, first things first, Merry Christmas. It's now officially December, so brace yourselves for hearing that on every podcast we have over the course of December.
I'm not even remotely prepared, Owen. It feels like a long way off for me.
It absolutely flew in. But look, yeah, so I think on that, look, Mary Liam, what a year it's been. It's been a crazy time for all industries, I think, but for HR in particular, 2021 obviously brought a lot of challenges, but also a lot of opportunities as well. Especially after 2020, I suppose it was the year of kind of crisis management and doing things quickly and getting things done and that kind of change management kind of piece. But we probably couldn't have expected that 2021 would be even kind of more complex with more to do. So I suppose my first question is, and I'll come to yourself first, Mary. So what do you think was the biggest challenge for HR teams and professionals this year?
It's a really interesting question, Owen, because there just has been so many challenges for HR teams and organisations in general. And it's almost been split, hasn't it, between those with frontline workers and those with knowledge-based workers. So I would say safety has been one of the biggest challenges for HR teams. And when I talk about safety, I talk about physical safety in terms of our social distancing, our hand sanitization, our mask wearing, and all the challenges that came with that. And then on top of that, you know, how do we keep people safe mentally as well? So there's been a huge focus on well-being for frontline workers and well-being for, knowledge-based workers who are working from their homes. I think it's just been, no HR discussion can take place these days without thinking about safety. So that to me would be one of the greatest challenges that all HR people, all businesses faced, not just in Ireland.
Same question to yourself, Liam. What do you think has been kind of the biggest HR challenge for HR this year?
Yeah, I think it's, I'd echo what Mary said, Owen. I think it's been an incredible year. I think the whole area, we can't have a discussion, unfortunately, without mentioning the COVID-19 pandemic and the real impact that's had on businesses and on life and on society. And I think, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, before coming on and thinking about take COVID out of the equation. And the role of the HR professional is still a demanding and pressurized one where they have to meet the demands of the business. But add in COVID-19, an anxious workforce, a worried workforce, work safe protocols that seem to change not even by the day, but by the hour, by the minute. And you could forgive HR professionals from being overwhelmed. Then they have the whole area of splitting teams, remote workers, some teams in, some teams not. And some level of which we're coming across, a level of conflict or tension between teams, i.e. I'm on team A, I have to come in, team B comes in, and then the whole area of dealing with a higher level of absenteeism in terms of making sure that those who are coming into work have sufficient support resources so that they don't feel, well, actually, I'm being in effect punished because someone else has contracted COVID. Because I have more work to do or more customers or more calls or more emails. So it's a really, really, really challenging year, I think, for HR professionals who I think will be looking forward to Christmas more than ever. So I think probably, as Mary said, trying to keep staff safe, trying to keep the show on the road, trying to deal with the demands of businesses, and trying to do it with a smile on their face, behind their mask, of course. So I think the demands on the HR professional have never been more. And I think that's also why HR professionals need support and need to look after themselves as well in the whole area of self-care and make sure that they're not being overwhelmed by the demands on them.
I feel really sorry for, you know, HR teams and organisations that all through the summer planned this great return to work. And the amount of work involved in, you know, I guess, surveying the workforce and preparing the offices and, you know, convincing leadership teams that this is the right thing to do, and looking at communication strategies and channels and all of that, only to be in the first week of December with a new variant of COVID, and again, more uncertainty as to what's going to happen. And we've all been told again to work from home, but the guidance is a bit loose. And for HR professionals, it's always a challenge, because there will be CEOs out there who are saying, yeah, let's proceed. We want people back in. You know, the guidance is a little bit loose. Let's play with that and have people back in the offices. And HR people being challenged by that, because the workforce who will be saying, no, but the government has said, don't come back to work. And an organisation that's saying, yeah, actually we should. So I think that's a challenge in itself as well.
Yeah, I think, I suppose, kind of building on that and some of the other key issues that have kind of arisen this year, maybe let's take, a look at some of them that have popped up. So I think one there, and you've kind of alluded to slightly, Mary, is kind of, and yourself, Liam, as well, was kind of the changing role of HR, which, as you said, Liam, even pre-COVID, it was always changing, it was always advancing, that kind of thing, getting broader by the day. But obviously then when you bring in the pandemic with it as well, there was obviously new areas that HR kind of had to work across. I suppose while it has been challenging and it has been very tough, has there also been positives in the sense that HR might now have a stronger kind of seat at the table? Because obviously these huge things like new work models, moving to remote work, all that kind of stuff is HR driven. It's obviously a fully organizational strategy, but has it maybe affected, has it kind of boosted the HR seat at the table to a certain degree? Any thoughts on that, Mary?
I think so. I think, but it's always dependent on the organization, the individual HR practitioner, the role they play within that organization, whether or not they have the ear of the senior team or not, and the CEO specifically. But I think there are opportunities, there have been opportunities for HR people to really step forward and lead. And you know, some of the clients that we have, we've seen people do amazing things, come up with really creative ideas around attraction, retention, you know, how communication might work, supporting the workforce. And so we're seeing a lot of creativity from HR. It's probably not a comfortable space for a lot of HR people, because, you know, we like the rules, the regulations, the policies, the procedures. You know, there's much that we do is about ensuring the practical operation of the business. And so all that flexing and changing and adapting has offered opportunities to people, but it's up to the individual whether they took it or not. I think even from our own perspective as a HR consultancy, the level of transformation that we've had to do within a period of 2 years has been unbelievable. 2 years ago, the idea that we would do everything online was inconceivable, you know, and today, you know, whether there's work from home or whether we can go back to the offices, actually the entire business runs remotely. And we can successfully maneuver our way through all this change more easily now in December 2021 than we could have in March 2020 when this whole thing broke.
Yeah, I think another topic that's kind of really come to the fore, and you mentioned it there again, Mary, is I suppose the whole area of well-being. That's obviously been a huge thing this year, and it'll be no different this year. I suppose everything from, I suppose, the mental health aspect, resilience, burnout with staff, right up to kind of things like, well, what kind of comp and bends, what kind of benefits are we now offering? Are we looking at our package more holistically, that kind of thing? Because obviously employer brand is going to be a huge thing next year. I suppose for yourself, Liam, how do you think that kind of well-being agenda has been affected? It's obviously always been there. It's obviously been hugely important, but has it, again, I suppose similarly to what we just said there, has it received more kind of a boost, let's say?
I think it has, unquestionably, Owen. I think all the research across all the industries would show that we're dealing with a more dispersed, a more anxious, more fearful workforce. I think at the heart of what we're doing in industry and society has to be the culture around the organization and the employee voice. So I think keeping close to our employees has never been more important in a more remote world, if that makes sense. So, and that is a conundrum on for many organizations. How do I keep doing my one-to-ones? How do I keep close to staff? How do I make sure I'm engaged with them? How do I make sure I understand their wants, needs, and desires when I might be 100 miles away from them physically or 120 kilometers away from them? And there's no doubt in my view, and I think Mary would agree, we are missing some of the intimacy in terms of, you know, the face-to-face connection or walking into a room and shaking hands with someone and just getting a sense from that personal empathy in that relationship. So I think things have changed. Interestingly, I was with a client yesterday and he was talking to me and we were talking actually about this subject about employee well-being. And he said, you know what, we've they're part of a franchise. We have this huge level of support from our main organization. And he said, but none of the employees took it up. So I think there's also a gap maybe in terms of the communication piece. We all know how important mental well-being, physical well-being is to people in society and at work. But I think sometimes we need to do a better job maybe promoting that or almost selling that to the individual employee. So an individual employee may have mental health issues. They may have physical challenges around getting to work and general level of fitness and physical activity. And I think it's around how we build that connection at an employment level so that people don't just see, I go to work, I do my work, I go home. And there's almost like a separate separation. And that we try and build in as much as possible that wellness is actually part of your work. It's part of your life. So I think, is it higher up the agenda than it was 2 years ago? There's no question about that, Owen. It is much higher up. I think an awful lot of organizations, as Mary has alluded to, are doing great work in this space, promoting it and building real strategies and cultures around it. Some organizations are doing very little. And I think when you come on later to talk about possibly recruitment and retention, I think we'll see that the organizations who are winning in the space, the war for talent and retention, are the ones that are promoting the wellness agenda and really doing some interesting things around that.
Absolutely, because I think the first, I suppose, kind of concern when we moved to remote working was around things like productivity, wasn't it? It was, how do we keep the business going? How do we keep it up to the levels that we were at while possibly now going to fully remote or hybrid or whatever? And I know there was that recent PwC report saying that productivity is now back up to pre-pandemic levels, or I won't say back up, it could have been positive the whole way through. But the one concern remains is around the kind of burnout piece and how do we keep an eye on employees? How do we not let productivity be the enemy of long-term, sustainable, happy people, you know, that kind of way as well. So I suppose for yourself, Mary, I suppose remote working has obviously been kind of the phrase of the year and there has been challenges. We've kind of spoken about how that pivot has been a big challenge for HR people. But I suppose, has it been kind of good for business as well? Also in the sense that, I suppose, kind of regional companies now having a bit more of an open market, things like that, where obviously, you know, have kind of better work-life balance, arguably, and those kind of things. How has remote working possibly been also a positive over the past year?
Yeah, well, I mean, employees are expressing what they need and want to their employers, and it has allowed, I guess, regional companies to level the playing field. But there's pros and cons to that, of course, because that means salaries are on the drive upwards, doesn't it? Regional companies could have in the past had people who have chosen lifestyle over salary and gone to the West, for instance, where they may be able to pay them less. Now those people can work anywhere they want anyway, because they can do it remotely. So I think it's been really positive in many ways, because people have been able to focus on their families, focus on their own well-being, focus on their own lives. I know certainly myself, I close my laptop, at the end of the day, and I go for a walk with my sister, and I meet neighbours in my community, and it's actually quite social and friendly. And that's the way in which I mark the end of my day and cut off from work. Took a bit of discipline to do it, because you could actually just work on. And there's nothing to stop you. You can throw on the dinner and go back to work. You can deal with the kids and go back to work. I think you have to be quite disciplined. And that's something for HR people to look out for. Are people doing more than they would ordinarily do, simply because they're at home and they're not quite sure how to cut off? And are HR people doing enough to teach people about preserving their own mental health and well-being and resilience, and the kind of tips and tricks and techniques that any employee can use to ensure that they're not burning out and not getting overworked?
Yeah, and I suppose that's probably one thing that has kind of pivoted this year as well. It's how do we, I suppose, look at performance management kind of in a hybrid world as well. And I know we kind of spoke about that on our webinar during the summer as well, but that's been, I suppose, a key piece as well, Liam, hasn't it? How do we kind of keep a focus on that? Because I know it's obviously been a risk. I suppose the naysayers of remote working in previous years would have always brought up that performance management kind of piece, but now it's become a reality. So I suppose what can HR teams kind of do to keep an eye on that and make sure they're pivoting successfully in that regard?
It's a very good question, Owen. I mean, I think, again, the evidence would say that the manager who was able to communicate and, performance manage his or her team when face-to-face has successfully transitioned to a remote dynamic, whereas the manager who had challenges around performance management of the team now probably has more challenges when it is remote. So I think in a recent CIPD survey, they found that productivity through remote working had actually increased by 48% of cases. So I think it's almost on a case-by-case basis. Again, I suppose some of the simple rules still apply, which is closeness, engagement, one-to-ones, staying connected is very, very important. And I think sometimes, because you don't see someone every day, or, as Mary alluded to correctly, the dynamic is different. When you walk into an office Monday to Friday and you're there in the physical space with someone, and then suddenly you're remote. So there is a loss of connectivity or closeness. However well we try and do the remote piece and MS Zoom, MS Teams and Zooms and all the rest of it, there is a loss. So I think you have to work harder as a manager to stay connected, stay close, understand what the person is doing. And I think, Owen, understand, as Mary has said, that all of the performance management piece that we're doing, if someone is working remotely, is taking place in a context. So someone could have a sick relative at home, they may have a relative in and out of hospital, they may have young children, they may have someone they're caring for in their home, in their environment. They may be living, as Mary has alluded to in different webinars, in a situation where their domestic home environment is quite stressful. There may be marital issues, or there may be, God forbid, domestic violence issues. So, we have to understand that happens in a context. So it's that delicate balancing act of staying close without being too close, It's trying to encourage better performance without the employee feeling that they're being overtly managed. It's a delicate balancing act. And I think the better managers are better able to navigate that tightrope than others. So I think it's staying close, it's staying connected, it's asking the employee how they are in a genuine sense in terms of how are you getting on, if they're going through a difficult patch, showing empathy and support and concern, and backing it up with positive actions in terms of employee well-being and engagement in that. So I don't have any magic formula other than communication, and keeping up the communication and the closeness piece and the number of times that you interact with the employee.
And I think it's important not to forget technology in there when we talk about performance management, because there are many tools out there now that employers are using to help them in that whole performance management piece too. So it's from an HR perspective, you can look out there for supporting tools that might improve that whole process, that might increase the amount of communication and feedback that's happening virtually as well as the face-to-face. I wouldn't like to see those tools being used instead of one-to-one meetings and important, you know, communication processes, but they can certainly help. And from HR perspective, you know, when you're looking at those kind of tools, it's really about thinking, well, you know, how does it fit into what we're trying to achieve within the organization? How might it bolster and support what we're already doing and improve what we're doing so that communication is happening all the time? We all know that employees have different views on how much they want to be communicated with. I know many people who think, well, look, you know, work is work for me. I don't want work interfering with my mental health, my well-being, my marriage, my life. I'm there to do a job. I have a life outside of that, and I'm going to be very clear that I don't want people to cross over that line or that divide. And then there are others that feel and want more support from the organization in that regard. So you've got to, as Liam says, you've got to be balanced. Some people will need a lot of communication and others will not need as much. But as a manager, you've got to ensure that you're taking a balanced approach to both, and that you're communicating in a reasonable way with everybody, in a consistent way with everybody. And technology can help you do that.
I think kind of similarly to that, I suppose it's kind of an undercurrent for anything that goes on through a time of change, is the topic of kind of upskilling. I know we spoke about this on a recent podcast with Simon Haynes, Mary, about the kind of skills gap and how HR teams can kind of upskill for 2022. I suppose what I'd be right in saying that this is probably a peak time for, I suppose, not being forced to upskill, but it is quite important now to have a look at, right, what technology are we using? What new skills are we missing? Where can we look in the business to kind of fill those gaps? I suppose, would that be a key consideration, do you think, Mary?
I think so. I think we've all come a long way in 2 years in terms of our use of video technology, for instance. But, you know, can you do more with the platforms? I believe you can. Are we doing more with them? Possibly not. Are there other better platforms out there that might be valuable to an organization? I believe so. I think the convergence of HR and technology hasn't quite taken off yet. There's so much that's happening out there in terms of platforms, in terms of skills, in terms of ways in which you can communicate, performance manage, shortlist, AI, VR, learning and development. There's just so much out there that HR really do need to get their head around. We talked in last week's podcast to Donal O'Donoghue. We had a really interesting discussion about application processes and, you know, how too many clicks in any process might cause a candidate to walk away, you know, and lead to candidate leakage when it comes to that. And again, I think the from a HR perspective, you really have to examine, well, what technology are we using it? What are we using it for? What's our purpose? What are we trying to achieve? And does it meet the organizational needs? And how is it linked into our strategy? And I think that's certainly something that HR people probably don't do particularly well.
I think another big thing for next year, and you mentioned there, as we spoke to Donal O'Donoghue last week, Mary, about the war for talent. And you mentioned it yourself, Liam, earlier. And that's my purpose. He left it till last set of our topics to kind of look at, because it's such a big one. I know, obviously, the term the Great Resignation was kind of thrown around a lot this year. And as we mentioned, Donal there again, I think he made a good point last week about how, was it a Great Resignation or was it just pent up demand? Because I think in 2020, a lot of people just hung on and said, there's something going on here. I'll ride out the storm. And then it was pent up demand in 2021. Or maybe it was some sort of Great Resignation where I suppose people saw more opportunities. So I suppose for yourself, Liam, any kind of thoughts on how difference the war for talent will be in 2022? Will it really be as big as we think it will be?
I think one of the things that COVID has definitely impacted or influenced on is people looking at their work-life balance, them looking more seriously in terms of looking probably more holistically at work and sort of, okay, you know, I need to pay the mortgage, I need a certain amount of financial security, I have this X amount of bills that I have to pay. I think they're now looking at it, okay, with a longer term view, what type of technology do I want to work with? What type of organization do I want to be associated with? What type of career progression do I want? One of the key areas I would see is the whole area of flexibility and whether that's working remotely or working from home or working from, or flexibility regarding hours or days or weeks. I think organizations, quite honestly, which have limited working from home policies or arrangement or limited flexibility, or who are working off a more traditional type work model, I think they're going to be left behind. I think there's evidence of that already. There was an interesting survey done by the best workplaces to work in organizations. And what they found was that organizations that they surveyed, the average lifespan of an employee was 5 years. With non-listed organizations or organizations who didn't have that philosophy, it was 2 years. And I think within those 3 years, if you talk about turnover, retraining, reskilling, loss of customer service connection, loss of intellectual capital, there's a huge loss there to the organization. So I think, are we going to see more resignations in 2022 than 2022? I think we will. I think organizations, it's now becoming yet again an employee market. All of our organizations who we interact with, whether they're in retail, catering, manufacturing, medical devices, professional services, they are saying they are experiencing challenges around recruitment and skill set. So I think my advice for organizations, you know, listen to your employee voice, culture. Again, the research would tell us that employees want to belong to an organization, and they want to feel that the culture that the organization actually lives is in sync with what type of person they are, and so that whole area of belonging. And so I think in answer to your question, will we have more resignations? I think we will. Organizations that don't listen very, very closely to their employees and don't adapt their cultures and values and strategies based on the employee voice, I think they will find it harder, much, much harder to recruit, and they'll simply be left behind.
You can't forget either that, you know, if you look at urban areas like Dublin, Cork, Galway, you know, Limerick in terms of house prices, that, you know, when you're looking at people who are looking to build a home, have a family and all of that. For the first time now, they can come out of those urban areas and, you know, build a home, buy a home somewhere where they can afford it. And, you know, I think that will drive as well resignations when it comes to organizations that are saying, you know, okay, we have a hybrid work model and you must be in the office 3 days a week. And somebody is saying, but look, that's not going to work if I relocate to an area that's not close to the office. And therefore, I'm going to look out there on the marketplace. And when they come out into the marketplace, there are lots and lots of opportunities. You're seeing skill shortages right the way across the organizations that have frontline workers, because many of those frontline workers are saying, well, look, this is too risky. I'm going to leave this job, retrain, upskill, move somewhere else and get one of these knowledge-based roles where I can work from home too. And you're seeing that real strain for the hotel sector, the catering, for cleaners, contract cleaners. All of those areas are struggling to get suitably qualified staff to come into those roles. And I think in part, you're seeing resignations for different reasons right across organizations in Ireland, whether it's those, you know, exhausted frontline workers who are, you know, working in healthcare settings, whether it's knowledge workers who have more opportunities, better salaries, locations that they want to be in. And like Liam says, you really have to tune into your own organization and, you know, look at your age demographic, and you've got to consider what's important to them. As Liam says, you know, when it comes to green policies, when it comes to ethical practices, when it comes to flexibility, when it comes to well-being, there are entirely different expectations out there. And some of the HR people I talk to reflect more traditional values. And I see that as problematic for their organizations because they're not moving with the times. They're not up to speed. They're not up to speed with their own demographic, or they're not looking at, well, we have quite an old population of employees who will be retired in the next 10 years. What are we doing now to attract and build a workforce which would be made up of younger people who have an entirely different set of principles and values in terms of what they want from work? And those differences in generations do exist. I think last week when we spoke to Donald O'Donoghue, I talked about, you know, when I started out in HR, I worked immense hours. One of the things, you know, when I came into the workforce was you certainly couldn't mention that you had children, and you certainly couldn't do it at any interview, and you probably kept it to yourself pretty much within the organization, except to those with whom you were closest. And now that is just completely different. And I think it's fantastic because the level of pressure I was under as a young working mother 20 years ago wasn't fair and wasn't right. And my personal needs weren't taken into consideration. That is entirely flipped. And I'm sure, Liam, you can echo the same thing because I know you started your career in a large corporate in Dublin as well, and would have had those kind of strains.
It's very much a change in society and a change in times, which is very much to be welcomed. And I think, you know, to echo what I said, those organisations who are giving flexibility, both in terms of their culture and the actual practical implementation of policies around, you know, working from home, flexibility, family-friendly policies, work-life balance. I think I would say to the organizations who are not, you know, in that space, you know, what is your strategy around retention and recruitment? because you're going to find it much more difficult to retain your existing staff. You're going to find it very, very difficult in the marketplace if you are selling your organization to a labor pool and a labor market that has shrunk quite dramatically. Because one thing we know from all the evidence is there is less employees, potential employees out there for various reasons to do with COVID and various other reasons in terms of inward migration and immigration, etc. So I think for organizations who are not offering family-friendly work-life, a sort of belongingness culture, they're going to find it much more difficult. That's the reality. And I think there's a real, I think, Mary, responsibility on senior leaders and senior managers to really look, is the culture in sync with what our employees actually want? And the potential employees out there or potential people who might join the organization, what are they looking for in an organization? And how does what we offer fit that scenario? And if it doesn't, I think they're going to have massive challenges. And what's going to happen is they're going to have to differentiate themselves in other ways, which I don't think they're going to be able to do.
And it's about creativity, isn't it? I think, you know, let's say that, you know, flexibility is a given, that's what people expect now. So they expect maybe flexibility in working hours, flexibility in where they work, and, you know, overall flexibility that they can balance their life better. So if that's a given, well, that's not enough to just offer that, is it? Now we have to be creative again and think, you know, what else do we need to do as an organization to give us that cutting edge? And I think it'll be really interesting to see what will happen with comp and bens, employee wellbeing, the kind of offerings that are going to be out there in 2022 as organizations. You've seen a lot of organizations give employees in 2021 a week off, a wellness week, or a wellness hour, or a bubble, you know, around lunchtime, or, you know, no emails after five, or whatever it is. You're seeing a lot of organizations coming out with those kind of offerings. Well, now they're a given, aren't they? Yeah. We've done that. And the employees like that. So do we get that again in 2022? Are we as exhausted as we were in 2020? I would say yes. So are we getting that again next year? If we're not getting that again, what else are we getting? How are you going to recognize us? How are you going to reward us? How are you going to differentiate yourself out there in the marketplace? So it's going to take a bit of creativity, I think, again, and sitting back on your laurels, you know, hoping that your brand speaks for itself. I don't think you can do that anymore. And, you know, many individuals are saying, well, you know, I'm going to work somewhere that supports the lifestyle I want, because I can now get the money I need anywhere.
Yeah, so I think looking forward to 2022 then, Mary, I suppose the key question is, we kind of round off, I know we've spoken about a lot of issues, but I suppose in short, maybe I'll kind of quick fire around to both yourselves, maybe to yourself first, Mary, what do you think will be the main HR priority for teams and organizations next year?
Ooh, I think probably in the summer I would have answered that more quickly. But the situation has mm-hmm. changed, hasn't it? Again, with this new variant of COVID. So it's hard to know until we know where we're at with that, what the priority will be. I think safety is probably going to be front and center again in 2022, and that we're going to have to pivot and adapt again, that it'll be difficult to put down a strategy that we can maintain throughout the full year at this point in time. But what I would say is adapting in HR is the name of the game. We have to be able to adapt, and that's the biggest skill and challenge for HR people at the moment. So I think well-being, recruitment and retention, ensuring that we're giving our employees what they want, that we're listening to their voice. I think it's going to be much the same as it was in 2021. And creativity, how can we do this better?
Certainly, and the same to yourself, Liam. I think it's probably a big part of it will be that kind of communication piece and listening to your employees, won't it? What do you think will be the biggest HR kind of priority?
It's going to be very boring, Owen, and sort of reiterate almost exactly what Mary has said. I think safety is going to be there. I think the whole area of retention of staff and skills development and trying to drive additional productivity through skills development and the challenges in terms of doing that with a remote workforce, I think I would agree with Mary in terms of adaptability. And the whole area of well-being of staff and tied into that is the whole area of higher levels of absenteeism through COVID and through various other aspects and managing your way through that, which again is very, very delicate and very difficult because, you know, you're managing conflict which may arise from remote work resources, higher levels of absenteeism, etc. So probably adaptability. I think just the general wellness of staff and making sure that you're engaging with staff and in some sort of way that you are measuring that on an ongoing basis and that you're trying to achieve incremental gain in terms of the overall wellness of staff. I think that would be a key area for HR practitioners in 2022.
And just before we go, before you wrap up, Owen, because I can see you gearing up to do that now, and I'm stepping in and just saying one thing. The whole area of mandatory vaccinations is being floated at the European Union level at the moment. And whether people welcome that or don't welcome that, you know, each person will have their own personal position on it. But certainly the mandatory vaccination of healthcare workers, the mandatory vaccination of our populations may become a feature of 2022. And, you know, the potential for conflict within the workplace is there. It was there in 2021, although we've had a bit of a stop-start approach to that. But that whole discussion is there floating around in the background with the potential for huge conflict in the workplace. And, you know, certainly this year, Liam and myself and our entire team have worked with employers around issues around strong views held by employees about their vaccination status. Because irrespective of whether the employer has the right to know it or not, certainly the employees themselves are talking to each other and are aware of these things. And I see that whole area of mandatory vaccination may suddenly come into the fore at some point next year for all of us to deal with as a society, but certainly from a HR perspective as well.
So I think a lot of issues, obviously, that are issues and challenges that have arisen. Much more to come, unfortunately, but again, it'll be an opportunity for HR to really kind of push the agenda of what they're all working on. And so hopefully there will be some good opportunities in 2022. So thank you again, Mary and Liam, for a fantastic discussion. We will have more over the course of December, where we'll be looking at things like employee engagement, diversity and inclusion throughout December, and how we can kind of look to that for 2022. We'll also be taking a deeper look at some employment law issues in January as well. So do make sure to listen, to subscribe and take out the notepads, because there will be, as we've spoken about there will be a lot of things to think about next year. So hopefully we can help you and your HR teams and your organizations as best we can. So thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels as we do release our episodes. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Liam, and Merry Christmas again.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.